and welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy Faye Solomon, your host today. On May 28th, we are broadcasting live from Studio 132 in the beautiful Oakland Hills, just across the bay from San Francisco. You're listening to the Global Product Management Talk, a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We have regularly scheduled broadcast discussions of vital issues affecting professionals passionate about product excellence, product management, startups, marketing, innovation, and methodology. You can listen to us as well as find our archives, over 120 episodes at this point, at www.blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk. That is our Twitter handle, @prodmgmttalk, and our hashtag, #prodmgmttalk. You can also find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, in the Google Play Store. There's a PRODMGMTTALK mobile app, so you can listen to our podcasts as well as our syndicated shows, which include Competitive Intel from Cascade Insights, discussing the voice of the customer and the competitive space. We are also syndicating our Google Hangout show from our partner Distilled Innovation in Colombia, South America. On Tuesdays, they are doing a live Google Hangout with startups in Latin America. So if you are listening in Spanish, you'll be able to catch their shows as well. This is a Global Product Management Talk, and we are interested in hearing from you. If you are tweeting, we will include you in a Twitter transcript. And if you are listening live, you're welcome to call into the show at 323-927-2957, because the best live listening quality is to call in to listen on the line during the show, and our six-time Emmy-winning sound engineer, BZ Lewis, will screen your call and let me know you're there. So you're welcome to call in and ask our speaker questions. Today, we are talking with Angelo Ferenzi, who is Vice President of Business Development at Ascendo. But before we bring him on, I want to thank our sponsors. The AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. They were founded in 1998, and they promote worldwide excellence in product management education with trainings, certifications, and professional networking opportunities, which provide corporate members an assurance that their product professionals are operating at peak performance. Find them on the web at www.aipmm.com. They have a great webinar series on Friday mornings, and just go to their website, aipmm.com, and look under webinars. I actually will be hosting, it's called moderating the webinar this Friday morning, where Mike Gosby is talking about mastering product positioning. So go to AIPMM and register ahead so you can get the download so you can attend. That webcast includes a video portion so you can see what the presenter Mike Gosby is talking about. Product positioning is very important to the success of your product. Thank you to Pipeline. So this really cool virtual conference is coming up on June 6th. It's free. You can attend it from your desk. It is a Pipeline virtual conference and hub for innovative product development. There will be live speakers. There will be all kinds of resources, downloads, networking opportunities. It's like attending a conference right from your device. You can go to pipelineconference.com to register for free. And after you register, you will have access to those materials for at least 6 months. So very worthwhile free education. The Startup Product Movement for Product Excellence is at startupproduct.com. There is a career board if you're looking for product positions, jobs.startupproduct.com, and a great announcement, very exciting, that Startup Product Academy is opening up its first course offerings here in Oakland at Tech Liminal, which is an awesome space. It's a web development and marketing agency which offers technology trainings. It's also a technology hotspot and co-working salon located on the main floor of the Ask.com building in Old Oakland. So starting in June, Startup Product Academy will be offering Product Management 101. And it is Product Management Fundamentals 101, based on the ProdBoc, which is a Product Management Body of Knowledge, which is a collaboration of experts in the product management field. These are the fundamentals, which will be the 101 course when there is an advanced postgraduate course in product management. Also weekly, and so two intensives are being offered in the summer starting in June on Tuesdays and Thursdays for 5 weeks. And on Tuesdays, product therapy is being offered at Tech Liminal, where you can come, bring your product, bring your product dilemma, find out how to forward your career in product management, and those will be group therapy with product management experts. So join us at Tech Liminal, at Pipeline, and daily, if you'd like to find out about educational events without leaving your desk, check out the Webcast Digest at Webcast Digest. These are daily curated educational webcasts, webinars, and free online events for your continuous learning. This is a product of Startup Academy Sandbox. So we are curating daily online events from vendors, from manufacturers, from software, so you can get 1 hour quickie free live courses to forward your career and delve deeper into different industries. So let's see what else. Today in San Francisco, if you're seeking a job, Startup Product Academy will be at San Francisco Startup Job Fair, which connects talented job seekers with the best San Francisco and Silicon Valley based startups. It's taking place at the beautiful Mission Bay Conference Center, and it's open from 1 to 5 with networking afterwards. So if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, you have all day to get over there and see what other startups are hiring. Great networking event, and you can find out more about Startup Product Academy and Tech Liminal offerings as well. I want to do a shout out to our communities in Asheville, North Carolina. They had a great event last week. And to the Boston Startup Product Community. Very exciting because today's speaker will be speaking on June 18th at LEAF, right near Kendall Square, about innovating your way into your customers' hearts. So if you're in the Boston area, check out Startup Product Talks Boston. And if you'd like to be mentored to forward your product career and learn how to become a better leader, you can step up to become a community organizer for any of our 18 plus and counting startup product communities worldwide and growing quickly in Latin America as well. So I think I covered, by the way, I'm Cindy Faye Solomon. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon, S-O-L-O-M-O-N. I'm the host, the producer, the instigator, and a passionate product person myself. Today I'm delighted to introduce to you Angelo Ferenzi. As I said, he's a vice president of business development at Assemble. at Ascendle. That's A-S-C-E-N-D-L-E. Follow them on Twitter at A-S-C-E-N-D-L-E. So today's high-tech businesses don't really sell technology anymore. Rather, they use the high-tech innovations they create to disrupt existing mature markets. This means that every business out there, whether a barbershop or the next Facebook, needs to be constantly thinking about and working towards new products and services that positively impact their customers' lives. This innovation is not optional. Today, it is a business imperative as critical to long-term success as having sound finances and good people. Fortunately, high-tech innovation isn't as hard to do as you might think, says Angelo. It is really the product of an individual genius or a single moment of inspiration. Instead, like anything else worth doing, innovation simply requires a defined goal and the willingness to pursue it. So maybe simple, but not easy. So let me tell you some more about Angelo. He's an entrepreneur, a successful business founder, and currently the vice president of business development for Ascendle. He has spent his entire 20-plus years in business focused on innovating new products in a diverse assortment of industries to an even more diverse group of customers and markets. So prior to joining Ascendle, some of his product development credits include a new automated control system for the manufacture of advanced materials, the first battery-operated wireless sensor suitable for commercial applications in harsh industrial environments, and North America's first Italian gelato products available in single-serve portions. Quickly about Ascendle, it's a software engineering firm specializing in strategic consulting, process coaching, and project execution, providing software product strategy guidance, agile scrum coaching, and award-winning web application and cross-platform mobile app development. So, excellent. Angelo, are you still with us?
I am. Boy, that was the longest introduction I've ever had. I'm happy to be with you.
Great to have you. So you're calling in from the Boston area?
I am. Today I'm actually up in the Portsmouth area, north of Boston in New Hampshire. We have an office in Portsmouth, and I'm in the Boston area. So, but today I'm in Portsmouth, but usually I'm my hometown is Belmont, which is just outside of Boston, about 6 miles from downtown.
Yeah, right next to Arlington.
Yes, exactly. Right next to Arlington. My wife is from Arlington.
Oh, nice. I actually lived there after college a few years ago.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm originally from Boston, South Shore, so I still have family. And,
oh, okay.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
We've spoken once before, but I didn't know
that. Yes, and so I'm so excited that the startup product community is growing in Boston. There's over 370 members since I last looked.
That is exciting. And that's how I originally found you, was through that community. But it is exciting. You're absolutely right. I think it's a skill set for now, for the time.
Yes, to learn how to manage products to success, but also engage in conversations with people across disciplines and across functions.
Absolutely.
Because it's just not one view that's going to lead, you know, certainly it takes a product team to develop the product, but also to propel it to success and scale it in the marketplace.
Well, no question about it. I mean, product development is, without question, a cross-functional function. I mean, it is cross-functional by its very nature. And, you know, you and I have talked about this before, but the principal skill, in my mind, of a product manager is the ability to speak the languages of the various functions and make sure that those wheels are greased between all of them. And it's just a fantastic cross-functional role, for sure.
So you have a long history of dealing with products from all aspects, which is interesting that you actually started your own was it a retail business in packaging a new form of gelato?
It was. Well, so it's my career has definitely taken some interesting twists and turns. And what is interesting about that, I think, is that kind of a commitment to some of what I understand to be product management is that kind of that is the core, that is the one kind of guiding light that is, or the thread that goes through all of my various careers. I kind of think that I think of myself as having three very different careers in my years. And so my first one was in Italy right after college. So I graduated from college as an industrial engineer, and my first job was in Italy, where I spent about 4 years, 3.5 years, working for an industrial electronics manufacturer. And it was a fantastic, wonderful experience in the industrial electronics market. I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. When I moved back to the States after my experience in Italy, it was soon thereafter, just a couple years, I think not even 2 years after I moved home, before that itch got too much, needed to be scratched. I had been thinking for some time about what kind of entrepreneurial venture did I want to do. I wanted to strike out on my own. I wanted to bootstrap. I wasn't looking for a business that required deep pockets from other investors. And my time in Italy had made me fall in love with gelato. And the whole time I was living in Italy, I had this kind of crazy thought in the back of my mind, or not crazy, it just kept popping up in the back of my mind. I mean, obviously by my name you can tell I'm an Italian American, Angelo Firenze, but I didn't know a whole heck of a lot about authentic Italian culture until I moved there. And I came home and I had this, or before I came home, while I was living in Italy, I was thinking to myself, this stuff is unbelievable. This gelato is absolutely incredible. It's basically Italy's version of ice cream, right? But I had never tasted anything like it. And I thought, how is it possible that this stuff doesn't exist in the United States? I mean, there's so many things of Italian culture that have in one way or another made their way across the Atlantic and become Americanized, you know, pizza and spaghetti and all these other, and I was like, this stuff is awesome. How did this not make it here? So it was actually a question I researched in the run-up to deciding to get into that business. I came up with some, I wondered if it was a market question. I wondered if I might be a rare American who thought this stuff was so good. And because if it was that kind of a question, it would have been stupid to start a business if nobody else was going to like this stuff. But I kind of did a little bit of research and came to the conclusion that the reason gelato wasn't big in the States the way it is in Italy was a whole bunch of there were some cultural reasons, but it was mostly actually technical reasons. So with that, I set out to see if America could handle a big gelato company. And I spent 10 years in that industry. I had some success with it. The way I got into that business was I bought an existing retail shop, a deli actually, it was an Italian deli, and I added gelato as a concept to that deli, and I wasn't sure how the business was going to grow, if I was going to be able to turn that into a franchisable concept or something else. Ultimately, what happened was my wholesale business grew very quickly, and the shop did well, but it was never something that was doing so well that it looked like I would be franchising it. So over the 10 years that I spent making gelato, the vast majority of it was done on the wholesale side. We manufactured product and sold it to food service establishments all over the East Coast. So, or not the East Coast, the Northeast, I should say.
So, Angelo...
New England plus...
I just wanted to ask you, So, but gelato out here in California, it's readily available. But at the time, it wasn't. So you were
market. We're going back. I was not first to market. No, I wasn't first to market. And certainly on the issue of gelato in California, it was a bigger deal in California than it was in New England. As it turns out, New England, as far as ice cream goes, is a huge the number one ice cream consuming city in the country is Cambridge, Massachusetts, actually. So we do eat a lot of ice cream in this corner of the woods, but it's not gelato. It's like New England has its own roots and culture around ice cream. But in any event, it has come a long way, even in California. But going back to when this was about 1999 when I was researching this and looking into it. Even in California, it wasn't as big a deal as it is today. So
awesome.
Sorry
for interrupting you.
Sorry. No problem.
History.
I lost my train of thought now, though. So there was an original question you asked, which I was taking a long way to getting to, and I'm trying to remember what it was, Cindy.
Well, you know, you're detail-oriented. You were giving us specifics about the history of how you started. I think I had asked you how you started with gelato, you know, and how...
Right, you asked me if it was
that was a huge leap to go from electrical, materials engineering into gelato, so...
For sure it was.
Industrial engineering,
and then another huge leap from there into software engineering. Although, but obviously the software engineering much closer to my career two steps back than my career one step back.
Yeah. So then how did you, you learned a lot about running a business, about product, certainly, you know, when you're a small business owner, you're in charge of everything. You are the whole team, and it's very hard to separate out, you know, the product from the business, because the business lives and dies with the quality and the choices made about the product. So, and that's, you know, very similar to startups, software startups or mobile, you know, when they have one product that they're launching and they build a company around it. You know, they don't think of themselves as small business owners because they're thinking of a grand market and scaling into a big marketplace, which small business owners are not thinking that far out, perhaps, unless they are strategic from the beginning.
Yeah, I certainly was. You know, I had big dreams when I got into that business. But I think you're right. I think there are definitely, there's all different kinds of small business owners, right? There are the ones who are looking to have a lifestyle business, you know. There's growth is hard. One of the things I learned as a small business owner is that growth is really, really hard. It's not easy to grow a business. And in fact, even emotionally, it can be hard from the standpoint of, when things start going well and customers start coming in the door, the more they come in, the more work that is. And sometimes it's more comfortable to just say, you know what, I've got a level of work that I'm comfortable with. I'm making enough money. And so businesses, as they grow, have to go through, you know, various stages of they get comfortable at a level, and then to jump to the next level oftentimes takes a whole lot more effort than you might imagine. But anyway, you know, I in that business, in that gelato business, even though I was a guy who was trying to grow it, I dealt with, you know, all different. We had customers that were billion-dollar enterprises, you know, huge hotel chains, and we had lots of customers that were individual mom-and-pop restaurants. And so I saw, you know, that was definitely a wide group of people that I was interacting with. And you certainly saw among the restaurant owners, you saw people who were, you know, not necessarily seeking to grow their business dramatically in revenues. They had found a lifestyle that worked very well for them, that they were happy with. Sure, if opportunity fell into their lap, they weren't going to turn it away, but they also weren't seeking to grow, you know, the next McDonald's or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So let me ask you, you know, so how did you get to product management? You know, people often who've been around, they say that they fell into product management because they were involved in product development and they got frustrated with bottlenecks or things not happening, or they came into Yep. product management from other parts of the organization. I've even heard of competitors becoming product managers of another, you know,
right.
of a competitive product. So how did you
get
there from industrial engineering and being a small business owner?
Sure. Well, you kind of touched on something. You know, as a small business owner, when the business is small enough, you wear many hats, right? You're the CFO, the CEO, the chief cook and bottle washer, as the expression goes. I mean, you wear lots of different hats. But of course, every individual has a hat they're most comfortable wearing. And for me, even before I started my gelato company and was a small business owner, even before that, the hat that I was most comfortable with was product management. And no question, I came to it in the kind of fall into it way. I don't think if you had asked me a few years prior to that, certainly when I was in college, if I even knew what a product manager was, I wouldn't have had any clue, I don't think. I definitely fell into it, but it seemed to be something that aligned closely, kind of on a deeper level. The skill sets were ones that were interesting to me, and my evidence of that is the fact that I went to school and got an engineering degree. The whole time I got the engineering degree, I knew I was never going to want to work as an engineer specifically. I thought I wanted to go into marketing and sales, but I wanted to go into marketing and sales of products, of technical products. And so I thought being an engineer and being able to know and deeply understand technology, but not yet practice that, that was kind of what I wanted to do coming out of school. And as it turned out, so I graduated in 1995. And you and I talked about the fact that was a very young internet in 1995. My senior year of college was the first year I saw a web browser, and that was probably the first year a lot of people saw a web browser. It was I remember downloading Netscape 1.0 onto my IBM 386 computer, I did have email before that. As a freshman, they gave us email addresses, but they were the old Unix style addresses. We didn't have any email clients or anything like that. But anyway, my point is the internet was very young as a commercial entity in 1995. But the first time I saw the World Wide Web, I was absolutely fascinated by it. And I spent a lot of time my senior year playing around on the web and learning about it and learning HTML and stuff. And that was enough of an impact for me that I kind of was ready. As I mentioned, I'd always had the entrepreneurial bug, and I was thinking when I was going to graduate from college that what I was going to do was just go into business for myself right out of the box, building websites for businesses. At that time, you know, some tiny fraction of businesses already had websites, and I it was clear to me they were going to need websites, and I thought, I'm just going to learn HTML and I'm going to do this. And it wasn't but, 2 months after I was out of school and I was pursuing that path that I was in the process of showing a business that happened to be an Italian company. That I was showing the CEO of this Italian company the World Wide Web, and he'd never seen it before. And I was explaining HTML a little bit to him, and I was explaining to him how the internet worked and how these computers all over the world could be connected and people could share information and hyperlinks. He was particularly fascinated with the concept of hyperlinks. And anyway, what ended up happening was he offered me a job. And the reason he offered me a job was because he had been, for a very long time, wanting to grow his company into the U.S. market. And here he is, the CEO of a medium-sized Italian manufacturing company, and he viewed the U.S. market for his products, for him, that was absolute nirvana. I mean, the idea that he could sell to one big, huge market, the continental-sized market where everybody speaks the same language, was just absolutely nirvana to him. But on the other hand, so he'd been dreaming about entering the U.S. market for a long time, but on the other hand, he wasn't sure. He was very weary of finding an American business leader to run his U.S. operation. So I was handed this absolutely phenomenal opportunity, basically on the merit of the fact that I had gotten into HTML. He was so blown away by that and by the concept of industrial engineering, the basic idea that I had a broad technical background as opposed to a very focused, you know, whether it be mechanical or electrical or something. Industrial engineering is more wide than deep, let's say, in its technical study. And so he was fascinated by that. He was fascinated by the fact that I had a bit of a business mind and liked to look for the value in things. And he saw that. And he offered me this job to come to Italy. And the job was to learn everything I possibly could about his business such that he could groom me to return to the U.S. someday to open his company in the U.S. The idea was that he'd have the best of both worlds. He'd have an American running the business, but it would be an American who was trained exactly the way he wanted him trained. That was his perspective. And for me, it was phenomenal because I got to move to Italy and I got to work for this company. And the training was I worked in every department of that business. I worked on the manufacturing floor, and within the manufacturing floor, I worked in every department from incoming inspection through shipping and everything that went on in between, from assemblies and subassemblies and testing and everything. So I worked in production, I worked in R&D, I spent a considerable amount of time. These were pretty sophisticated electronics that were being installed into all kinds of industrial applications, and I spent a lot of time with his service team that would actually go out into the field and go into companies and tune the equipment and set it up into these different industrial applications. I spent a lot of time with them seeing the products work in the field and how they worked and what they did. And then ultimately I settled in with the marketing and sales department because it was the marketing and sales. Fundamentally, if we were going to open the company in the U.S., it was going to be fundamentally a sales organization since the products were being manufactured in Italy. And so that experience of working for all of these different departments of the company and then ultimately settling in a marketing and sales role was very much laying a foundation for a career in product management, for becoming a product management manager. Because for me, there are a couple of key points of what it means to be a product manager. And one of them is certainly one key skill that a product manager has is an ability, A, to understand what there is a need for, and to be able to define and quantify that need. And so whether that means defining a market or whether that means defining an application for which there could be a market, it's basically an idea. It's the ability to look at something and see, hey, there's a need there. Something that could be done better. So being observant on the idea of where there are needs is one piece of the puzzle. And the other piece of the puzzle is the ability to know what's possible, right? What can technology actually accomplish? What can be done? What different kinds of things can be pulled together and turned into a product to meet that need? And so lots of people can do one of those two things, and a lot of people are probably more naturally stronger at one or the other, but a product manager needs to be able to do both really well, needs to be able to see and identify needs, and needs to be able to know what is technically possible. And with those two things, the product manager is in good pace, in a good spot to be able to start to define specifications for a product, and which is what I consider kind of the very beginning of the marketing process. Quite frankly, a lot of people think of marketing as more what I think of as public relations and advertising and communications. I think marketing as starting with what's the market, what do they need, and what's the set of product specifications that will meet that need. And so that experience I had of working in all of those departments gave me a sense, without me even knowing it, I was learning it by osmosis, of the kinds of things that were technically possible. And then going out into the field and actually banging my head against the wall, trying to get the products to be tuned rightly, correctly to certain applications, started to help me understand the kinds of needs that existed in a given market. And so right there, I was laying the foundation for becoming a product manager, whether I knew it or not. That's exactly what I was doing. So that was the beginning.
Excellent. So at the beginning, you actually gave me the intro that I read about, how to innovate your way into customers' hearts, and you discussed that everyone is in the high-tech business. So really, what do you mean by that? Because certainly I am software-focused, and I did come out of hardware sales from early on in writing about hardware, and also came into the web early on before I came out to the Valley. So when I talk about product management and people go, oh, that's just for software, or oh, that's just for high tech, not everyone thinks that they're in the high tech business. So what do you mean by that general statement, Angelo?
Right. Well. So what I mean is kind of what I mean is, if you don't think you're in the high-tech business, you better start thinking it. Because those in the high-tech business are after your business. No matter how mature you think your market is, or, let's say you're a restaurant, for example, you're not thinking that there are high-tech solutions to your problem. But you're wrong. There are. There are all kinds of high-tech solutions that are eating up market shares in existing markets all the time. So an example might be you're a pizza shop, and you're the pizza shop on Main Street, USA, and everybody you believe your market is mature, and you know how many pies you're going to sell on a Friday night, and that's just locked up and good, mature, solid money business. And then comes along a web startup that, is conglomerating the menus of 20 different restaurants and doing delivery from any of them for somebody who wants to order online or off of their phone. And now all of a sudden, your pizza shop, which is a totally mature business, is getting huge amounts of market share sucked away by a mobile app. So kind of that's what I mean by we're all in the high-tech business. I can't think of a business model that can't be improved, that can't make experiences for its customers better through the use of technology. There can always be some innovation that is improving the lives of customers. And so if you're not thinking about what those innovations might be, you're doing yourself a disservice, because somebody is. And the way I kind of came across the it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek title to say we're all in the high-tech business now. But the way I kind of came to that was the opposite of what I just described, actually. Brick-and-mortar businesses being starting to be competed with by new innovative high-tech companies. It's the fact that companies, well, the way I came at it was, if we were having this discussion 30 years ago, and 30 years ago we went out and we said, and I asked you, name for me 5 high-tech companies in the U.S., right? And what are the 5 biggest high-tech companies? And so 30 years ago, what is that? The early 1980s. So interestingly enough, we would have
IBM.
Said, yeah, we would have said IBM. We would have probably would have said Apple, which is interesting.
Intel was around. HP was around.
Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah.
Yep. Over here on the East Coast, there was DEC, was starting to probably wind down already in the 80s, Digital Equipment Corporation. There was Wang Computer.
Wang!
Yep.
I actually computerized a marketing firm in New York City using Wang workstations. I love them. They had the best word processing, and they were way out in front in standalone systems for, you know, businesses, specifically accounting and word processing. So, wow.
No question about it. No question about it.
Right.
So
that,
it's fun when I have that. I've had that conversation with a few people. I have actually started it even further back. But the point is, if we were talking about high-tech businesses back then, we point to all of these companies, and by and large, they would be selling a product that, in fact, was a highly technical, innovative thing, right? So Wang had that computer system. IBM sold computers. They were only just starting to get into the personal computer market. They were selling big mainframe computers. The point is, Intel. You mentioned Intel. Intel kind of makes the epitome of a high-tech object in a microprocessor. The point is, they sold and actually generated their profits by selling something that was an object of high technology, right? Now, if we fast forward to today and we think, who are the big, hot, high-tech companies? What are some names that come to mind for you?
Well, they're right here in the Valley. Google, Facebook, PayPal.
Google, Facebook.
Intuit.
PayPal. Twitter.
Twitter.
Intuit, yeah. So, interesting when you think about it. So first of all, none of those companies have made their money off of a piece of hardware, right?
Right.
They're all specifically software companies. And kind of more deeply than that.
Well, I just want to interject
they
here
really
that we got through 44 minutes without mentioning Apple, but of course they need to be on that list.
And they're still there, absolutely. No, I actually did mention Apple a little bit ago.
Oh, okay.
Because I think that fascinating, they were on the list in the 80s too, which is one of the reasons Apple is such an absolutely fascinating company. But my point is that today's high-tech companies, not only are they software companies as opposed to hardware companies, I mean, that's one major shift, but even bigger than that, they're not selling the software. They're using the software to deliver other kinds of services. So in the case of Facebook, they're not selling software to anybody. They're selling advertising. They make their money off of advertising, and they give the functionality of their software away. Google, I mean, virtually all of their money comes from being a media company, again, selling advertising. Even software companies that used to sell their software, that whole model has switched. So now, you know, the most recent version of Microsoft Office, or, you know, Microsoft used to sell operating systems and Microsoft Office. Microsoft Office is now a software as a service, right? They're just selling you the functionality that the technology provides. And I guess that's my fundamental point. It's that the way the shift has been from actually selling the technology to selling or renting the benefit that the technology provides, and the benefit being provided is almost always in some old, stodgy, mature market. So here's Google, this enormous high-tech, you know, behemoth powerhouse, right? But they make all of their money in one of the oldest industries there is, which is media, which is just selling advertising, right? Facebook is about relationships, but again, they're selling advertising. And all of the software companies that used to actually sell their software are moving to a software as a service model. There are tremendous, wonderful economic reasons for doing that for both the consumer and the business, which is why software as a service is such a great, huge thing. But my point is the service that they're providing is almost always a service that existed before anything high-tech ever came along. Accounting was needed before high-tech came along. You know, word processing or writing letters and having them be edited was needed before word processors came along. And so from that, I mean, if you buy that argument, if you buy what I just said, that these companies aren't really selling the technology anymore so much as they are selling the benefit that their technology provides, and if you buy that the benefit that's being provided is always almost always a real-world old benefit, then it just doesn't matter what real-world old market you operate in. Somebody is thinking about innovating a better way to do it. And there's no reason why that can't be you, which is kind of what Ascendl is all about. We're all about helping people who don't typically think of themselves as innovators to help at least get that process started, and if possible, you know, help them take their first steps in creating some really cool new benefit, meaningful innovation for their clients and for their customers, and make people's lives better and all that good stuff.
Excellent. But really, Angel, aren't there some businesses for which innovation is impossible? And let me think of one. You know, I immediately in my mind just transposed innovation to automation. So I was thinking, getting your hair done. I was thinking, trying to think of something really relevant to me. And you can't automate that, but you certainly could innovate that, I guess.
You can innovate it. I mentioned barber spots specifically because I could think of an app I would put in my pocket right now for a barber shop, which is tell me how many people. Well, you know, I guess women usually get appointments when they go to the hair salon, or at least my wife does. But I don't know. I myself walk into the barber shop, and if there's more than four guys waiting, I walk out. And so, you know, an app that could tell me if my local barbershop had some people waiting, you know, would be actually a fairly easy app to develop. And my point is, even a barber could provide a service to his customers through the use of technology that would increase his relationship with his customers, make it stronger. And you know, I've given this talk a few times, and I always ask that question. I say to people when I talk about it, I challenge them. I say, come up with a business that where innovation couldn't improve the experience for the customer. And I haven't heard one yet. I've had people tell me things that they think are stumping or are not that. I'll give you an example of one that I kind of think missed the mark. So I had this exact conversation with somebody, and they mentioned, I can think of something where there's no room for innovation. And I said, oh, great, let me hear it. And she said, the printing business. And I thought, my gosh, you are missing the mark here. That's being innovated in a million different ways, not the least of which is...
It's been from the beginning.
The product there is the information, and it's not going to be on paper anymore.
Right.
Or if you are sticking with the concept of things that need to be printed on paper, there's companies like VistaPrint. I don't know if you're familiar
right.
with them, but
yep.
you know, the ability to go online and design. So there's a million.
You
different
send
ways
them a file,
the
and they'll print
business.
Out. So, you send them a file.
Exactly. So.
Yeah.
So. Right. So. And fundamentally, the reason I think I say it a little bit tongue in cheek. The reason, to me, any business could have innovation to improve the experience of their customers is because fundamentally we're dealing with human beings, and so far as I can tell, human beings are not all entirely happy, right? We all have things in our lives that we wish were different. And as long as we have things in our lives that we wish were different, there are going to be things that could make life better. and so as long as that's the case, there's room for innovation. And what has changed to make innovation so important today is just, quite frankly, the pace of change. And not only are things happening more quickly today than they happened 10 years ago, not only is the pace of change more rapid, but the rate of pace of change is more rapid. And so things are getting faster and faster and faster and faster. And perhaps there'll be an end to that at some point, but I don't think there's any end in sight. And so as long as that's happening, there is opportunity for people to see the change. On the one hand, some things are for changing for the better, but on the other hand, some things are changing for the worse. And so there is always opportunity to look at your customer base, look at how you interact with them, and see if there's an opportunity to innovate a better, closer relationship with those customers. And I just happen to be, with Ascendl now, a huge proponent of using mobile technology to do that, because that's the company I work for, that's what we do, and that's what we are really good at helping clients work on. But certainly doesn't have to be that. I mean, an innovation doesn't have to be software-based. It doesn't have to be mobile-based. It doesn't have to be electronic in any way. An innovation is just really about what I talked about earlier, which is seeing needs, seeing what is available to us in terms of what's possible, and trying to bring together what's available to us and what's possible to meet a need that's not currently being, that's not currently being addressed. And so that's a little bit about, the depth of how I believe innovation is necessary and why I think it's necessary for businesses if they want to survive over the long term. What got me excited when I joined Ascendl was, I, having considered myself a product manager all my life, had developed a depth of knowledge in terms of the markets and learning and understanding them, and in terms of technology and figuring out what was possible. But for me, my role as a product manager kind of came to a bit of an end Or if not an end, there was a pause in its responsibility at the moment that this product specification was drawn up. So I thought if I knew the market and I knew what they could bear as far as price and I knew what kinds of features and benefits they wanted and I knew what was possible technologically, I could help design a product that had the right price and the right feature set to meet a market demand. And I could hand that to an R&D team and I could say, design this. If we build this at this cost, we can sell it for this cost and make money, and there will be people who want to buy it. And what I knew very little about until joining Ascendl was how to actually do that, how to actually then take that product specification and through effective project management actually turn it into a product. And that, to me, is what innovation actually is. Innovation is the process between the idea and the real-world thing that exists that was the fruits of that idea. And there's a process between those two things. And I think we have this romantic view, or a lot of people do, that innovations happen by one brilliant mind, but rarely do they. And, in fact, the more complicated the thing and the more stakeholders involved, the innovation requires a team of people working together to make it happen, and everyone on that team has their own preconceived ideas and their own desires and their own, and so getting a team to work together towards a common goal is what good project management is all about, and that effectively is kind of the world that Ascendl lives in, specifically around software development. But but the principles are the same no matter what it is you're innovating.
Excellent. So, Angelo, well, we've come to the end of the hour. I told you it would go fast.
Wow. It sure did.
That was just half.
I can talk, I guess.
And so if you would like to meet Angelo in person, he will be discussing this and more about innovating your way into your customers' hearts in person on June 18th, that's a Wednesday evening, from 6:30 to 9 at leaf.me. They're on First Street near Kendall Square in Cambridge. And Leaf is a great host for the event because they're a rapidly growing tech company changing the way brick-and-mortar merchants do business. So a great place. They're very excited about the startup product community in Boston. So you can register for that if you're in the Boston area at meetup.com/startupproducttalksboston. So thank you so much for joining us. Angelo Ferenzi has been our speaker today. Broadcast will be available on demand. I'm Cindy Faye Solomon, your host. I will be in San Francisco today at the Startup Job Fair at the Mission Bay, and I will be the moderator on the AIPMM webinar this Friday discussing product positioning with Mike Gosby. You can follow us to get updates of the upcoming broadcasts at PRODMGMTTALK, or come over to startupproduct.com, check out the community calendar, the meetups, the webcast digest, and all kinds of events and community opportunities, as well as education to forward your product success and product management career. Thanks, Angelo, for joining us today.
Thank you, Cindy. That was fun talking. And thank you for all the great questions.
Great. And look forward to having you back again, as well as having you speak in Boston on June 18th. Thank you to our listeners and to our tweeters. Oh, just a shout out to Hala Salah, Matt Rogish, Joe Patrick, the OPMA, which is a product management organization in Canada, in Ottawa, and to our other tweeters, thanks for joining us and join us again. Thank you to BZ Lewis, our sound engineer at Studio 132. to Blame Sally for the music, and to the AIPMM for sponsoring today's webcast. Have a great week.
On a dry winter leaf, I wouldn't know love if you found me.